Wendy, let's dance.
All right.
Put on your red shoes and dance the blues. Hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. Welcome to the show. If you want to join in, you know how to do it. It's 312-981-7200. How are you? Everything good?
Who cares about me? We care about you. You hung out with Blair from Facts of Life yesterday.
Yes, I did.
I'm surprised to see you. I thought you would have stolen
run off
her
with
away
her.
And
yeah.
Joined the circus.
Yes. There was some discussion of that. We considered that for a few minutes. I know you kind of touched on this at the beginning of the show yesterday when I wasn't here. For those of you who don't know, they shot a TV show at my house yesterday. There's a show called Collector's Call. It's on MeTV. They're shooting their second season now. So what the storyline is that Lisa Welchel, TV's Blair from Facts of Life, goes to various collectors' houses and they kind of profile you. They go through your collection. They ask why you do it, which is a good question. Question my wife
has
asked.
Do they ask your what? Yeah.
More than once.
I'd like to hear Terry's answer in addition to yours.
So they talk to you, the collector, and then they talk to those around you, family and or friends. Then they bring in an expert to appraise your collection, give you a kind of a value of what it's worth. And then they make you some sort of an offer, either an offer to buy your collection outright or to trade something. Maybe they'll bring in a valuable trade item for you. But the thing that was weirdest was, and I know you hit on this yesterday, I would say 35 or 40 times yesterday for no particular reason.
You pinched yourself.
I said, is this happening? Is Blair from the Facts of Life really having her makeup done in my bedroom? Because she did. Am I really sitting at my dining room table talking to Blair from the Facts of Life? Is this real? What happened? How did this happen? That kept happening over, and I'm sure she was also asking the same thing. How did this happen? I'm positive. But it was so surrealistic. I kept thinking, if somebody had come up to a teenage version of me and said, here's what will happen to you someday, and gone through all the different things I've gone through, including yesterday, I wouldn't have believed it. There's no way to believe that.
Well, and the same thing, like, who would have thought we would have been friends with Danny Bonaducci after watching The Partridge Family?
That's another one that comes up all the time.
That's weird.
All the time. Although, I know I've told you this, when I was a kid, I used to tell family and friends that someday he and I would work together. And they would go, based on what? And I go, I don't know. I just have a feeling one day Danny and I will work together. And then we did work together.
You were a weird kid.
Or a genius. No,
we'll
go with weird.
So it went well. I know I was thinking, you know, Blair's not going to be there. Lisa Welchel isn't going to be there the whole 8 hours. You know, she's going to do her shots and leave the crew there. She was there the whole time, wasn't she?
It was an 11-hour shoot. They started at 7:30. They got there for camera setups at 7:30. They left just before 6:30. So it was 11 hours. She was there almost all of it. She was there for about 8 hours of it.
We had a listener, I think his name was Mike. I could be wrong, but he had the Coca-Cola collection, and Lisa Welchel interviewed him. He's on an episode of Collector's Call as well.
Yeah.
And remember he said that he had a Coke machine, and he got the personalized Coke can that said Lisa Welchel and
nice.
Also Collector's Corner on it. Did you do anything like that?
No. I was going to get... There is an action figure of her. There's a line of Facts of Life figures.
That's what Mary Vandeveld said. You don't have it?
No.
Why didn't you get it?
She had the big hair going. Face, her face was not didn't look.
That's
like
the
her,
reason
though.
None of the none of the likenesses are even close to accurate, and I didn't want to insult her.
Well, you could have just showed it to her with a little tiny paper bag over its head.
that would have been very nice. Sure, I could have done that. Here's another weird element to this. The crew kept telling me stories, and it's a big crew. Like when you watch the show, you don't realize. You know how when you watch any show, you watch the credits and you go, wait, 84 people worked on that? Really? How did that happen?
I have no concept of that.
They said, you know, they go, we'll bring the crew. That's cool, right? And I go, yeah, bring the crew, because I don't know what the crew means. So the crew was 10 people. So you had those 10 people, plus her, plus me, plus my friend Leah, who was on the show, plus Mark, the expert who they brought in to make the trade, plus all the light rigging situations that are all over
the
house. There was a gaffer, Wendy.
What does a gaffer do again?
He gaffs.
I got to see what a
his name
is.
Was Jim Gaffigan. How isn't that weird?
Yes.
But the crew kept telling me stories.
Chief electrician, by the way.
Yeah, the gaffer's your chief electrician. There was a best boy, and guess who that was? Me. So the crew would say several times, they would call me over and they, you know, just small talk, you know, while they're setting up a next shot or something. And they go, yeah, we went to this one guy's house. And they would tell me a weird story about another collector. And then another crew member would go, you know, about a year ago, we were shooting season one and we went to this one guy's house. And he would tell me a weird story. And then I thought, I bet I'm tomorrow's weird story.
And today is tomorrow for you, and Jimmy Mack is going to be on it as well, so I'll ask him if they told you
weird positive.
Stuff. Not for his collection. It's a Star Wars collector that had a bigger collection than Jim.
Yeah.
But he's the plus one.
Yeah.
But I will ask him if they said, so we were at this guy's house yesterday.
I'm positive there was some weird story. The thing I feel the worst about is, yesterday was a pretty hot day.
It was.
So when they're shooting, there's lights all over the place. They're very, very hot lights. And you can't have your air conditioning on because our air conditioning makes a humming noise. So if you've got the air conditioning on, you're going to hear that in the soundtrack. So they would say, you know, kill the air. So the air conditioning then goes off.
Oh, my God.
And then it's lights and speed. And when you're shooting that long in such extreme heat, you get a little drippy. You know?
Oh, Bill. Well, so, at least, you know, you could use that as an excuse as you were getting all sweaty because Blair from Facts of Life was
right.
in your house all day.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the air's off.
Yeah, that's the reason.
Did they have to dab you? Did you have to
there
get a big powder puff?
There was a lot of dabbing, puffing, and fluffing.
was Jim Gaffigan?
Jim Gaffigan kept dabbing and puffing and fluffing us. And I don't know what you tip on that. I just gave him 10 extra bucks. I said, here, go to town. So, but, you know, several times they had to stop. And not because of me, because of everybody, because it was just so hot. And I kept apologizing, but there was nothing I could do. The air conditioning makes some noise.
Well, most people's air conditioning makes
right.
noise. So you're not alone in that.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh,
yes.
That's unfortunate.
So I wonder, as the episode goes on, although they shoot stuff out of sequence, so maybe when you're watching it, you'll go, look, the cast looks so dry and calm and collected, and then all of a sudden, it was like there was a wet t-shirt contest. What happened to these people?
I am so excited for you.
It was a lot of fun.
And do you know yet when this is going to air? They haven't figured
that out.
They think
February or March. Oh. And Lisa, on more than one occasion, said, I know that you're on radio. I would love to come on and promote the show, which I had already asked the producers if we could do that. So she'll come up sometime in either February or March, whatever sweeps week is, I guess. So
you're adorable.
She'll gladly come up, she said.
See how he did that? That was very nice.
Yeah, he's so cute.
Yeah.
Did you get her number?
No. No. How would that have looked? Hey, as long as you're here, TV's
Blair
from Facts
of Life. Well, just to book her for the show, you know, I thought maybe you... I just know you, and I thought you... Why don't you, like with your phone out, not know even knowing how to program it.
Yeah.
Why don't you just give me your number so then we
I'll
can
have
work
that.
This out.
Yeah, I could have done that, I guess. I will tell you, there was a story I'd always wanted to ask her, and I got to ask her the story at lunch. We'll take a break, and I'll tell you the story.
You had lunch with her?
Yeah.
Did you get them lunch? Did you have a
no,
spread?
No, they brought in breakfast when they started, and then they brought in lunch midway through the day. They went and got it at a restaurant.
Did you have anything for her? Just yourself?
What, food-wise, you mean?
Like a spread. Mary, was that you yesterday that thought you should have had a spread?
He had everything for her.
Did you clean your bathrooms at least?
Yeah,
of course.
Mary, that's the weirdest question in the world.
That would be my first concern.
Well, of course you did.
Blair from Facts of Life is coming over. Do not touch the bathroom. Make sure the bathroom is in awful condition. You'd love that.
I can't wait to hear your Blair question. We will take
a break.
Yeah, very happy for you.
Yeah, oh, thanks. It was fun. All right, so more of this in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Sus, it's Bill and Wendy. Welcome to the show. If you're just tuning in, I was not here yesterday because they were filming a television show at my house. Lisa Welchel, Blair from Facts of Life, was at my house.
She's beautiful.
She was upset that the bathrooms were so clean, Wendy, but she was she was very beautiful. She's going to be a grandmother.
God love
her. In a couple of months, one of her oldest child is going to have a baby of their own.
How can that be?
So one of those girls, one of those young girls from the Facts of Life will be a grandmother very, very soon.
Isn't Does that make you feel a little old?
Very old.
She's
very
still younger old. Than us, though, I believe.
I think she's a year or two younger than you and I are. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So there was a story that I wanted so badly to ask her, and I was teetering. I'm like, I want to ask her this story. I don't want to offend. The last thing I want to do is offend her. But there's something I've been wondering for a long time. So I said, Lisa, I have a question for you. If it's bad, we don't talk about it. If it's good, we talk about it. Agreed. Okay. So I said, I remember when the Facts of Life first started, you and Kim Fields were guests on the PTL show. This was the show that Jim and Tammy Faye Baker had, right? So my friends and I used to watch it when I was in college because we would play a game as to how long into the episode Tammy Faye would cry. You know, how, like, what, at what minute mark we would all take bets, because at some point, maybe she was happy, maybe she was upset, whatever it was, she would just burst into tears. So we would watch the show regularly. So on this one particular episode, it's the girls who played Blair and Tootie. So it's Lisa Welchel and Kim Fields.
That's a weird booking.
Well, they were both pretty religious, and maybe still are, you know? So it kind of made sense. So they bring them out, and Jim Baker says, he welcomes them and says how excited he is to have them on because he loves The Facts of Life. It's one of his favorite shows. And then he says to Lisa Welchel, "Does it ever bother you, Lisa, when you're out on a date and Mrs. Garrett says, 'I want you in by 8 o'clock, but your date's going real well and you want to stay out till 9 o'clock or 9:30, and Mrs. Garrett says, "No, you got to be in by 8, and stuff like that. And she goes, "Well, you know, if it's in the script, you know, we just do what's in the script and stuff like that." And Jim Baker's nodding, and he says to Kim Fields, he goes, "When you roller skate, because there's times maybe you don't want to roller skate, but they're having a big function at the school and you come in and you're roller skating." And she goes, "Well, you know, it's, if it's in the script, you know, that I roller skate, I have to roller skate." Every one of his questions, it was like he couldn't differentiate the fact that they were real people playing these characters, and the like, he didn't know what to do.
That's,
what do I do?
Weird.
And she's laughing, and she goes, "I have to be honest with you, that could have happened, but I don't remember it." And I said, "Why is that?" And she goes, "There was so much happening at the time." You know, all of a sudden she went from obscurity to being a TV star that everybody knew and loved. She goes, "I just don't remember most of it. So many people come and they tell me stories of things that happened back then, and I don't remember it." She goes, "I have a good memory. I just don't remember those things."
That's weird.
Isn't it?
Tammy Faye Baker ended up on MTV's Surreal Life and became really good friends with Vince Neil.
Yes.
From Motley Crue.
Yeah.
And it was really, she was a really kind-hearted individual.
Yes, she was. She really
An emotional wreck, but a kind-hearted individual.
Did you, there's a documentary about her called The Eyes of Tammy Faye.
No, but I have to see it.
It's great. You know who else she was really good friends with? And it's a strange, it's not as strange as Vince Neil, but do you remember Jim J. Bullock?
Yeah.
The actor?
They had a show, didn't they?
They had a talk show together.
Where's he now?
Jim J. and Tammy Faye.
At least we know where Tammy is. Where's Jimmy J.?
Well, Tammy's no longer with us.
Tammy died a few years ago.
And Jim J.'s career died. We have to take a break.
Wow. What an angry transition.
I don't know where he's been. Did you talk to her about being a Mouseketeer or being on Survivor?
No. I didn't know she was on Survivor until you just...
I told you that.
Yeah?
I told you that last week. See, you
told me the Mouseketeer part, but I...
You didn't believe me that she was on Survivor and Mary Vandeveld concurred.
She can back
you
up on that.
Yes.
Yeah, we were all excited about hearing about that.
No, I didn't ask her. We'll ask her when she comes in.
All right. I'm
Make
glad
sure
you
the bathrooms are clean, Mary, when she comes into the station.
I'm not
please.
Cleaning that
no?
one.
No? All right.
No way.
School's coming back.
I know. Soon. Fast.
I know a lot of parents are happy that their kids are going back to school, but actually there's more pressure than to get the kids up and out the door.
Mm-hmm.
Allstate is having a school supply drive, and we have Allstate agent and owner John Tunnel in the studio with us. How are you doing today, John?
I'm doing well. Great. Thank you.
Kids are going back to school.
Everybody's getting excited. Lots
I
of moms
bet not.
Are happy. And
John, be honest, you have kids. Are they excited to be going back to school?
I would say that would be 50-50.
Is that true?
On a given day. I think the excitement level is there to get back in the routine of things, but I think that summer they're enjoying pretty well. So.
We never ever went back in August. It was always into September, around the first week of September.
After Labor Day, right?
After Labor Day, always.
That's how I was as well, and I enjoyed that schedule.
That's better.
It's good to get them back to start learning again
a little
earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always exciting to get back and see who's in your class. And like that first day or so, very exciting. And then all of a sudden it's like, wow, this is the school year again.
Right. Now it's real.
When's it over?
Yeah, exactly. how long have you been an Allstate agency owner?
I had started back in May of 2007, so 12 years.
And how did it come to be for you? What was going on?
I was just looking to different opportunities to own a business and insurance. I was in the industry already, so I just wanted to look for an opportunity where I could own a small business, and it kind of, with the Allstate Foundation and their partnerships with community involvement, it was a good fit for me at the time. So
very good.
Where is your agency located?
It's in Park Ridge. I started in the city and relocated a few years ago to Park Ridge.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about the school supply drive. A bunch of Chicago agency owners are going in on this. It benefits the Pitchin Wood Family Foundation. Mm-hmm. Explain a little about this.
Sure. So the nice thing about being an agent, we have a lot of friendships in the community, and it's really people just want to give back. So we I partnered up with 9 other agency owners, and we're working to get the supplies over to the Wood Family Foundation, the Pitchin program. The reason I found out about them is I actually reached out to them about their mentor program. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was a great opportunity. My time schedule with coaching and other things that I do in the community doesn't fit for this year, but that was one of the things I was like, how can we get back, you know, if we can't get time? But rallying these agents together, we're able to provide a grant from the Allstate Foundation of $5,000 in addition to the supplies that we'll be able
to
provide for them.
Very nice.
So,
is the Wood family carry wood of the Cubs?
That's correct.
It is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Good guess.
I was just taking a shot. So you've gotten to know him a little bit. Did you meet him?
Not personally, no. But
no?
Just
why is he avoiding you, John? What's going on
there? You know, I think it was our previous interview back a few years ago that I was on the show.
He heard that interview?
He said, there's no way.
He's a smart man, that Kerry Wood. All right.
Now, can we or the listeners help with this school supply drive?
Yeah, it'd be an honor. We're looking just through the 16th, we're looking to get items like crayons, markers, colored pencils, notebooks, glue, number 2 pencils, folders. We're looking, you know, of the locations, they can bring them into our locations and we'll get them to the Wood Family Foundation.
Very nice.
Is there a Facebook page that people can check for more information and where to donate?
Yeah, absolutely. If you go to Facebook, and it's Tunnel Agency, it's with 2 L's, that has a list of the locations where people can drop them off locally.
Is there anything you have too much of that you just say, if you're thinking about getting school supplies, you don't get this, we have enough of this or not?
You know, I think just because of the amount of teachers that use their personal money, if the Wood Family Foundation can't use them, we've partnered up with other schools the last year that I know would benefit from it as well. So I would say that we can't accept too many items because everybody's, you know, scraping pennies together as a teacher.
Sure.
On average, they spend about $500 of their own funds. And
isn't that amazing?
It's a sad thing. My father was a principal, so I have kind of a passion for the educators. It's a lot more patience than I have, so I appreciate what they do for our kids.
Yep.
You can never have too many Ticonderoga pencils. They are the absolute best pencils. They write so smoothly.
Yeah.
And I used to love the scented markers. Those were those were fun.
Sure.
All right. Allstate agent John Tunnel, he's an agent and an agency owner. Insurance is so important. Is there anything we need to know about insurance as we're kicking off the school year?
I think just making sure that you do take time to review at least once a year with your agent, just to make sure that if something does come up as far as you needing to file a claim, that you're prepared for it and know what you have and what you don't have, just to prepare yourself. So back to school, back to basics. Just have an insurance review with your agent.
And speaking of back to school, parents tell all your kids that if they get good grades, they get a discount on their car insurance.
Absolutely.
Don't they?
There's a good student discount that's available. And we also have a few programs that help with young drivers as far as like the DriveWise app. You can kind of monitor how your kids are driving once they start having that opportunity to drive if you allow them to.
Is it still less to insure girls who are driving than boys that are driving?
I would say that based on what I see, it's pretty comparable as far as, like, there's a lot of distracted driving now.
Yes.
So it's really rates have changed more because of the distracted driving that's kind of drove up the cost.
All right, since you said that, I trust you. I know you'll give me a straight answer on this. I've always thought that accidents must have increased with everybody texting while they're driving. You're not supposed to do it, but you see it all the time. Have there been more accidents in the last 10 years or so?
There have been, and unfortunately, when you investigate the claim, a lot of people aren't even braking.
Yeah.
So the total losses have gone up tremendously over the years.
You get more of a collision.
It does, unfortunately.
Huh. See, but I bet, and I could be wrong, that new drivers are better with the lack of texting and driving than us old folk, because they know better. I get yelled at even if I touch my phone, even if I'm just plugging it in. Mom, don't touch the phone.
Yeah.
So I bet they're better because it's been around all their lives.
Back in the early days when the phones came out, I remember holding them in the, trying to turn the radio, hold them in your hand.
Yeah.
It was, you know.
While putting on my mascara. I was very talented.
I didn't have the pleasure to do that, but but no, it's definitely something like you can't go on I-90 for more than a minute without seeing someone on their phone. So, you know, get there safe. Just put it down. Like, life is so short.
Does Allstate do that thing, John, where they monitor, like they put a diary, an electronic diary in your car to determine how fast you're going and base rates on that? Do they do that?
We have a MileWise program that does base rates, and then the DriveWise app, you can earn rewards if you're driving under 85 miles per hour. So,
oh, I can't do
sorry,
it.
Wendy.
Yeah.
I got to ask you something, though, because I have two boys that I thought on their 16th birthday they would rush to get their driver's license. I believe one of your daughters was not in a big hurry
Reese
either.
Waited a year and a half.
Are you noticing that kids are... On my 16th birthday, I was there getting my license. Have you noticed that kids are waiting a little longer to get their license?
That does seem to be a trend. I know when I was 16, I got my license, picked up a friend, and had an accident in my parents' car, totaled their car, so...
That's why you got into the insurance business,
so,
I'm sure.
I had personal experience with the claims process and how to work with your parents to get some money back to them for the loss. But we have noticed, you know, it seems like not the 16-year-olds, but they're waiting maybe till 18, 19 to get, you know, their driver's license.
Right.
So it's interesting how it's changed. And I think with Uber and Lyft and those kind
that's
of things,
true.
I think they might be taking advantage of those sometimes too.
Is there any kind of insurance that's being sold a lot more now, John, than in the past? Is there something that's shown a dramatic increase?
Like the usage-based insurance is really coming up as a trend. It's more basing rates on miles driven than just sitting there, like your car. So, like the MileWise we're selling a lot of.
Yeah.
But the housing market with home and condos being built and bought are still pretty big size.
Has Allstate had any kind of meeting over what happens when there's driverless cars? Because that will change the insurance game 100%, won't it?
The nice thing about Allstate is they're usually on the cutting edge of technology,
so
they do a lot of research. And I know that is definitely something that they've been looking at.
Yeah.
I think with the change in the way things will happen, I know usage base will probably be more down the line because you'll still need insurance, obviously,
sure.
if someone steals your car, even if it's not being driven.
Yep.
Hopefully I'll have that luxury because I know I won't ever have a driver. But it would be nice to just kind of sit back and relax, hopefully in the future.
Yeah.
He's Allstate agent and owner John Tunnell, and I still get to buy school supplies for my kids, and I got to be honest with you, I kind of enjoy doing it. But maybe listeners out there, their kids are grown and they don't get to buy school supplies. Buy them, and you can donate them to the Pitch-In program to benefit the Wood Family Foundation. And again, any information listeners might need to find where to donate and how to do it.
Mm-hmm. Just feel free to call our office at 847-306-8660 or go on Facebook, Tunnell Agency, and we'll be happy to guide you to an agent that's close by.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Happy back to school.
Same to you.
Thanks so much.
Good to see you, John.
Good
Thanks
to see
so
you
much for being here.
Bill Leff is back.
Hi, Wendy. It's nice to see you again.
Thank you to Mary Vandeveld for sitting in for you yesterday. We had fun, Mary,
Heard
didn't
good
we?
Good things, Mary.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Oh, it's lunchtime. Sorry.
I'm eating my chips.
Mary's having a chalupa.
Mary told us what her lunch was yesterday. Every day it's the same thing. It's a half a sandwich, her own baggie full of chips, which is obviously not like a big-ass bag of chips.
Right.
And what else? And a cookie.
What a great name for a bag of chips, though.
Big-ass bag
of
chips.
Yeah, wouldn't that would say it all. I would buy that bag.
I'm going to write that down.
And backers? Kettle chips. Kettle chips are the best.
Those are
They're
good too.
The best.
Yep.
I saw something in the news that I wanted to talk to you about. I just saw this today. You know how they did the American Crime Story, the O.J. Simpson one?
I do. I remember.
They're doing a Monica Lewinsky one. That's the next one they're doing. Sarah Paulson, Beanie Feldstein.
Love Beanie Feldstein.
I do, too. She is the sister of...
Jonah Hill.
Yes. She's really funny.
Yeah.
Anna Lee Ashford will star in the anthology with writer Sarah Burgess set to pen the script. Nearly a year and a half after season two of FX's Emmy Award-winning crime story, American Crime Story, I guess, was this the what's his name? The designer. Johnny Versace. Was that this? I get him confused. Wasn't O.J. one of
Andrew
those two?
Cunanan?
Yeah. I think this was the one.
I think so.
OJ was on Fox, wasn't it?
Yes, I'm sorry, yes. This was the, God, Andrew Cannon, that's right.
Yeah.
And the...
He was played by Darren Criss from Glee.
Yeah, the guy from Glee. Yeah. I watched that one. That was good.
He's good.
Well, now...
But I don't remember Andrew Cannon breaking into song and dance quite as often. I thought that part was fake. I was very upset about that part.
Season 3 will focus on the saga of the Clinton presidency scandal with Monica Lewinsky on board to produce it. This is going to be really interesting. Impeachment, American Crime Story. As I mentioned, Sarah Paulson will be Linda Tripp. She's going to be great. She's great at anything she does.
Is she in every one of those?
Yes, it seems like it. Beanie Feldstein is playing Monica Lewinsky.
That is some interesting casting.
Is her name really Beanie?
Mm-hmm. Beanie Feldstein.
Oh, that's quite
Now, in the old days of Hollywood, somebody would have said to Beanie Feldstein, we should probably change your name a little bit, but by today's standards, you could have a movie star named Beanie Feldstein.
As long as you have a Cecil.
Yes, right. She should marry a guy named Cecil. That would be great, Mary.
Like in the days of early days of radio, they wanted people to change their name if it sounded like hard to pronounce or ethnic.
Yes.
So that's where we got all the, you know, Michael St. John. Yeah. They would take their middle name and add a saint to it.
Yeah.
I'll say it now after all these years in the business. My name was Wendy Snyder.
Your name, your original name, Steve?
It was Wendy Snyder.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they had me change it.
Wendy's original name was Beanie Feldstein.
I wish it was.
But they said it sounded too Irish. Isn't that crazy?
Annalee Ashford. I don't know who that is, but she's going to be Paula Jones.
I don't know who that is either.
It's based on Jeffrey Toobin's bestseller, A Vast Conspiracy, the real story of the sex scandal that nearly brought down a president.
Who's playing Clinton, do we know?
I don't have that information right now. That's a good question. Who do you think should play Bill Clinton?
Well, you know, the impressions you used to see of him on Saturday Night Live were so good. It was Phil Hartman who did the best Bill Clinton impression.
And then Daryl Hammond did it.
Daryl Hammond did a really good one.
But I want to see somebody who, you know, I don't want to see a caricature with the thumb up of Daryl Hammond doing it. I want a
more realistic version of it.
So who looks like him?
Jay Leno.
No, Jay Leno.
He's got the same chin as Clinton.
No.
He does. Just that, like, not
Jay Leno has two of Clinton's chins.
Yes, he does. He was on America's Got Talent. He's been the guest judge for a
Jay Leno?
Yes, it was weird.
More people would tune in to see Jay Leno as Bill Clinton than anything.
Yeah.
Who wouldn't want to see that? That would be great casting. Mary, good call on that.
I just see his chin for some reason.
I wanted to, there's an actor I'm thinking of and I can't think of his name and the battery just ran out on my mouse.
Oh.
So I can't do anything.
Oh, so you can't Google it, you're saying.
I can't do anything. Can I get a battery?
Can I get a witness?
God, who would be a good Timothy Oliphant?
I love him, but
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
I don't think of him as Clinton.
I want to know who would be a good Bill Clinton.
Are there any other major? I'm thinking of any other major. Well, somebody's got to play Hillary Clinton, obviously, too, and we don't know who that would be. Beanie Feldstein can't play two roles in the same movie. She's no Patty Duke.
Does Beanie look anything like
Jonah Hill?
Monica Lewinsky?
You know, I can almost see it.
I think she does. I just looked up pictures when you mentioned her, and she does.
It's a little stretch, but I could almost see it.
Oh, she does look like her.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think she does.
That's some interesting
casting.
Make her
hair a little fluffy, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
She could do it.
And Wendy, when can we expect this movie to be shown?
This movie, I don't know if they've set a date yet. Let me just say, FX's American Crime Story franchise has become a cultural touchstone, providing greater context for stories that deserve greater understanding, like the O.J. Simpson trial and saga.
Yes.
So that was one of them.
Yes.
That was the first one. Then the Andrew Cannon's tragic crime spree.
Wasn't the Menendez brothers also them? Or did somebody else do that one?
This says it's their third one.
Because I remember seeing a Menendez one, but it must have been from somebody else.
Yeah, I can't keep them straight. It doesn't say when this
They had the Hudson
out.
Brothers play the Menendez brothers. It was really fun.
And then they'd rotate the third one in and out.
Right. There was always an extra Hudson brother. So they did like a bonus Menendez brother. I don't remember there being a Garrett Menendez. Who's that one? But it worked somehow. I don't know how. Wendy, also, we've been accused, you and I, of killing Jim J. Bullock.
No, he's not dead.
No, he's very much alive, but as we've mentioned on the show in the past, sometimes we'll mention a celebrity and they will soon die. But to our defense, Larry Storch is still alive. We mentioned him a week ago, and he's still very much alive, so we don't always kill these people.
I was reading up on Jim J. Bullock, and
he's been busy.
Well, he just got arrested this year, I guess.
Oh.
Right? Did you see that?
No, I didn't see that part.
A drug arrest. But he's been HIV positive for many years. He lost his partner.
And, really? Yeah. I did not know that.
Apparently, Wendy, he was on a show.
According to Wikipedia, I should say.
There was a show called Worst Celebrity Chefs, which is such an intriguing title to me. I don't know why that would make somebody tune in, but that's the name of the show, Worst Celebrity Chefs. So several people saying that they saw him on that show and that he was hysterically funny on there.
He was funny in a very over-the-top, overacting kind of
Jim
way.
J. Bullock.
Yeah.
For people who don't know, he first burst onto the scene in Too Close for Comfort, the Ted Knight series. Ted Knight and Nancy Dussault, I believe.
Yes.
He was their neighbor. Monroe?
Yes, very good.
Yeah. And then he did a couple of other little things, a lot of Fantasy Island, Love Boat type things, but then he got that talk show with Tammy Faye, and that changed everything. Did you ever see that show?
Yeah, I did.
It was actually kind of fun to watch, because it was two people that were so different, kind of forced together, and then they ended up being really good friends.
They were. There are some suggestions as to who should play... Bill Clinton. Do you remember Schwimmer played Kardashian? Was it Kardashian?
Yes, he played Robert Kardashian.
He did a... He didn't.
He was pretty good.
It was surprisingly pretty good. And
but he kept pining for Rachel, which I thought was weird, because Kardashian never did that. But he was good in that. He did a nice job.
He did. Well, now metro.co.uk is suggesting Matthew Perry. If Schwimmer can star in American Crime Story, maybe he can put in a word with Ryan Murphy for his pal Matthew Perry to play Bill Clinton.
All right. That'd be fun.
Daryl Hammett, of course, we mentioned him.
But that's a...
Michael McKean.
No. No. He'd be too, I hate to say it, but he'd be too old for it anyway, wouldn't he? Michael McKean's up in his 60s. You're getting Bill Clinton from 20 plus years ago, so the timing doesn't work out.
Jeff Daniels.
I could see that. But again, age-wise, you might have a problem.
Jeff Bridges, too good looking to be Bill Clinton.
Too good looking.
Matthew Modine.
Still too old. These guys are all in their 60s. The Clinton you want in this is in his late 40s.
Yeah, I guess.
Right?
Rob Lowe, way too good looking.
Yeah, too good looking.
He could play Hillary.
Oh.
He's way too good looking. It says the Clintons have yet to be cast.
John Travolta?
Too old.
Dennis Quaid?
Too old.
Okay, so what age are you thinking?
Justin Timberlake.
Justin Timberlake would be perfect.
He would be good.
Bringing sexy back. For real. I mean,
music.
For real. Yeah.
I like it. All right. Well, we'll keep you posted. They have not cast the Clintons yet. God, who would play Hillary?
That's the other problem, is you got to get somebody for that. That's something of a challenge.
No, I got somebody in mind, and I don't know their name. I'm going to do some Googling.
Bill F., it's Wendy Snyder. Our guest is Dr. John Duffy. John comes by every other week, and we talk about matters of the mind. John, Wendy and I were discussing something.
Matters of the mind.
Very impressive,
Thank
Bill.
You.
I
Thank
like
you.
That, too.
Thank you. Wendy and I were discussing something on Monday, and I said, this is something we must discuss with John. This is so his territory. Here's what it is. There was a survey done by a company called YouGov. They talked to 1,254 adults aged 18 and up.
Okay.
Their focus was on millennials, and the questions were about friendships. They found, I'm going to give you two statistics, the first upsetting, the second extremely upsetting.
Okay.
They found that 29%, just under 30%, 29.8%, said that they didn't have a best friend. People in that age bracket, age 23 to 38, just did not have a best friend.
Right.
The more alarming part of the survey is that 22% said no friends at all. They didn't have a single friend in the world. That's more than one in five millennials. How in the world can that be?
Okay, so I hate to say that reflects the population I work with really, really well. That feels about right to me. I've been doing this for a quarter century. When I started, that wasn't the case. That idea of having close friends has diminished over time, and more people feel alone and isolated at those ages. I think a lot of it has to do with the idea that they are alone an awful lot of the time. A lot of it also has to do with kind of a relative idea that other people are having fun. And I have evidence on Snapchat, on Instagram.
FOMO.
It perpetrates that myth, doesn't it?
Truly. It absolutely does.
Yeah.
So even if, right. So that fear of missing out. So even if you feel like, well, I did something last night, but other people did a better thing.
Yeah.
So that doesn't count. And the people I was with aren't really close. I don't even know if they really like me. I think that might have been charity that they invited me along. So this kind of pairs with a sense of low self-esteem too, because there might be people around you who really value your friendship, but if you don't feel that, if you don't feel like you're worthy of that,
right,
then you're going to assume they really don't want me around. They're just, you know, their parents pushed them into this, or they decided collectively, let's throw them a bone and invite them along.
Can I tell you something I've noticed, and I don't know if I'm on track or completely off the rails on this one. When I was in high school, there obviously wasn't Snapchat or social media, and we had fun together, but we also had heart-to-hearts, like, oh, a boyfriend broke up with me, I need to talk to you. Now, the communication between kids are more of, here's a funny meme, or here's a funny joke. It's like they don't open up to each other as much as we did.
It's true, unless there is something urgent going on. So this is troubling too, because in the middle of the night, if a kid is having a hard time, if a kid feels suicidal, they're not going and waking up their parents, they're not going to the ER, they're not calling 911, they're texting a friend, or they're, you know, Snapchatting a friend. And they're, and so, you know, 14-year-olds are responsible for the lives of other 14-year-olds.
That's too much responsibility.
Way too much responsibility. No kid can be responsible for that. And yet, it gives them this sense of purpose, you know what I mean? And it makes them feel good to be able to help their friends too. But so it's hard to talk them down from feeling that sense of responsibility regardless.
Do you think this will change? Do you think, like, listening to the statistics Bill just talked about, it seems like this is the way it's going to go from now on?
It's definitely, things are still trending in that direction. I've worked with a lot of kids who go out of their way to post things online that suggest, like, hey, you can always reach out to me, you're never alone. So there is this little bit of groundswell, but it's new, of kids trying to reach out to that lonely kid who feels like he or she has no friends. So there's some of that happening, but the statistic still stands. I suspect we're getting worse before we get better.
Oh, isn't that scary?
Yes.
But at a time when suicide rates are so high, and just the mere fact that human content is going down, in the old days when you can just physically talk to somebody, and now those days, instead of talking to somebody, it's a quick text and that's it. That's not the contact that we're used to and we need.
No, and even if kids grew up with social media and they don't know any different, which most kids right now, younger kids, they don't know. They don't remember what it was like before an iPhone. That idea that they need actual contact with people is a little lost on them. So they feel like, oh, my way of connecting with people is through my phone.
Right.
And that's why they're so desperate to hold on to it at night when they go to sleep, and in the morning when they first wake up, and during the school day, because they feel like, oh, I'm going to miss something really crucial here. That FOMO is going to hit me hard if I can't be in touch with people right now.
So many times when we have a tragedy like we've had in the last couple of days, as they're profiling the person or people who did it, you hear the word loner. This is somebody that really didn't have much interaction with other people. It ties into this.
I'm afraid it does. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's not, I don't think it's the sole and direct and only cause of it, but do I think it's a variable in this?
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know what I mean? Like, I think there is kind of this crisis of disconnection in our culture overall that we really need to address broadly. So we need to create circumstances where our millennials, where our kids have more face-to-face contact. That's why I'm kind of, I didn't used to be a stickler for joining something, being a part of something where other people are involved on a regular basis, but now kids need that so badly because that just that texting contact is too remote to feel intimate enough to feel like you really belong.
What do you recommend to parents who see this in their own kids where you just go, oh, I have a son or a daughter who's just not interacting with anybody. What's your next step?
Yeah, so I'll tell you what I ask them not to do is to try to talk their kids out of it. So a lot of parents will say, oh, you're so bright and you're funny and good looking and witty. And so there's no reason for you to feel this way.
Yeah.
And that's kind of dismissive and saying, you can't really talk to me about it. I can't handle your pain. So I think it's important that parents acknowledge, yeah, this has got to be really hard for you. And brainstorm with their kid. Like, you know, so what can we do together? What can we figure out to get you more involved, to get you more connected with people? And what do you think's in the way? Mm-hmm. And kids are really like forthcoming about this stuff and really helpful in brainstorming and problem solving their way through this. So that's what I recommend more than anything else. And usually it involves becoming a part of something else bigger than yourself.
It's funny because if I say that to my kids, like, you know, you've got everything going for you. You're funny. You're good looking. You have to say that you're my mom.
Right, like, of course.
They don't take it from, it doesn't mean anything coming from us.
That's the other piece of it is, yeah. Right? You know, like that's the parent card.
Right.
We have to be that way. Right.
My mom never said any of that good stuff to me. I wish I was craving it and I say it too much probably.
But my heart so goes out to these people. Again, the bracket ages were 23 to 38 saying at 22%, we don't have any friends. You think that would be the time in life that you'd tend to have the most friends.
Right.
It would almost make sense that way.
Absolutely.
It's just a horrible number.
Yeah, and I think part of it is perception. Part of it is like that low self-esteem will color your perception
right.
of whether you're connected and whether you have friends or not. And part of it is isolation. You know,
yeah.
If you believe, it's kind of a confirmation bias kind of thing where if you believe that nobody's going to be drawn to you,
yeah.
you're going to withdraw. You're
yeah.
going to want you. So even if you've got the apartment in Lincoln Park and you've got bars that are accessible and you've got, you know, dating apps and things like that, you will pull away from all of that stuff if
sure.
you feel unworthy of it.
Someone has just texted in, exactly, I'm in the insurance business and I have to meet with people of all ages face to face. Most of the millennials out there can't even have a reasonable conversation. How can you be friends with somebody who you can't even talk with? And that's not a slam on the millennials, but they've been part of their phones so long that the face to face communication is lacking.
Definitely. And in favor of the millennials, they crave that. They want that. They want to connect with one another. You know, it's just, I think that we don't have the venues for it. And again, I don't think that self-worth piece is present in enough of these young people
right.
to get there.
John, the other day, I also said the word friends means something different than it used to mean because of Facebook. A friend now is somebody that you may have never met ever. They're just on your Facebook page. But try borrowing money for them or asking them to drive you to the airport. They're not going to be a true friend.
It's so true. I mean, it's kind of like standing on an empty box, right? You know,
yeah.
So you get this idea that, wow, I've accumulated thousands of friends on Facebook. But you're right. Nobody would drive you to the airport.
Right.
Nobody would be there for you in the middle of the night. So it's a false sense of self-worth. And young people from, you know, teenagers all the way up to the 30s, as you're talking about, Bill, are well aware that they're kind of kidding themselves.
Yeah.
I've had kids tell me that directly.
Yeah.
But they're like, I'll take this, you know, thin facsimile of reality over feeling nothing, over
yeah.
feeling no connection whatsoever to anybody.
John Duffy is with us today. He is back from a vacation, and you went to another country. And I have some questions for you about how things are in other countries. Can we chat about that when
I would
we come
love
back?
That.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And Dr. John Duffy, our show psychologist, is in the studio. Now, I noticed that you traveled afar.
Yes.
You were in another country. And I was thinking about it. Other countries, and the one you went to, they have video games.
Mm-hmm.
They have mental illness.
Yep.
I don't think there are many shootings where you were. And what's the political atmosphere like? Do people fight each other and are scared to say anything? Where were you, first
so
of all?
So we went to Switzerland, and we were pretty much all over. Switzerland's a small country, so in about 8 days, we were able to travel kind of throughout the country, from the rural parts to, you know, Zurich, and it was, first of all, a beautiful country. The political atmosphere, curiously, I couldn't tell you much about because, and this is the truth, because it just wasn't a topic of much discussion. People weren't talking about politics. And last Thursday happened to be this big national holiday. And so we went to see the fireworks and people were gathered around. But in terms of people wearing a political agenda, either on their sleeve, out loud, if I'm being really frank with you guys, the only people I heard mention politics were tourists who were American.
You know, I will tell you this. I never liked talking about politics, and it wasn't part of everybody's everyday speech many, many years ago.
Right.
It wasn't. It was like you didn't say who you voted for. If someone else had a different point of view, you'd go, oh, that's interesting.
Right.
But now you can't do that. I mean, there are so many times I bite my tongue. There are so many times I break my finger so I don't post something on Facebook. It's like it's so mean. And what's the deal?
So I read a book recently about the psychology of politics and how it's changed over the decades. And in the last 15 years or so, and a lot of it started with Obama's run for office in that he recognized, oh, there is political power online. So, you know, social media is where I can gain some clout and some leverage.
First Twitter president.
Exactly, mm-hmm. Right? Obama. So, right. So ever since then, politics has become kind of like this insidious part of our moment-to-moment discourse because the president right now, if he tweeted, you know, in 15 minutes, it would show up on one of the major news channels on average within five.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the tweet itself. And so, you know, politicians, and this one in particular, can drive the news cycle and get us all talking about one agenda. So there's a cleverness to it because right. As opposed to whatever anybody's planning in terms of production on news channels, on radio stations and things like that, a single tweet, you know, something you just send from your phone
right.
Can control the entire cycle.
Right.
That's an awful lot of political power, more so than was available that existed 20 years ago.
Right.
I didn't think of it that way, and now I see why Donald Trump tweets all the time.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, there's a power in that.
I'm going to start doing that, and no one will talk about it.
That's interesting.
Boy.
Do you think in a place like Switzerland, and to be fair, there are parts of the world where political discussion, I know in England, for instance, with a new prime minister and with what they're going through with Brexit.
Sure.
It'd be very hard to get through a day where people aren't talking about politics.
No doubt.
But do you think in a place like Switzerland, it's a conscious effort? They're saying internally, let's just keep this to ourselves. It's better to live life without that discussion. What do you think is going on there?
100%. I think that is it feels like a very conscious decision.
Yeah.
And they've got more time than we do in a lot of ways. They take a siesta in the middle of the day. They stand and talk in the streets with one another.
Yeah.
But very few of them are looking at their phones to see what's going on right now. They're looking at each other face to face. And normally the discussions I heard were about like what's going on in the neighborhood. What's going on with the weather? And these are locals. These are people who live in Switzerland. You know, so it wasn't like I was getting some narrow definition of what was going on there. It felt pretty broad, and it felt like it kind of crossed the country that people were not talking about politics and weren't necessarily talking a lot about current events, you know, unless it was something pointed. They were just talking to each other.
But, John, they have the internet there.
Yep.
So if they're exposed to the internet at any length during a day, how are they not processing that information and either agreeing or disagreeing with it with people around them?
I'll be honest. I think they choose what to attend to and what to ignore, at least by and large. You know, I won't say that there's never, ever a political discussion in Switzerland. Certainly there is, but it's not constant. You know, it's something they talk about maybe periodically.
Sure.
I think we tend to be a little more reactive. So if something is going on, if we get a pop-up notification, you know, we're going to like want to talk about that right here, right now, because this feels of the moment and alarming.
Yeah.
Whereas there, very little feels of the moment and alarming. They operate at a slower pace, and they're a little more thoughtful.
Yep.
And
and the Swiss Miss Instant Cocoa is fresh, you know it's good.
So fresh.
So good.
Yeah, right. No travel time.
Welcome back. How can listeners reach you if they want to talk to you? And you also have a new book coming out. We're out of time because we have White Sox baseball coming up.
Yeah.
But we'll get you back on to talk about that. That's this month, right?
Excellent. It's September 15th.
Okay. And where do people reach you?
DrJohnDuffy.com. The book is Parenting the New Teen in the Age of Anxiety.
Better get that title down.
I know, right?
Next time we ask you.